This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Real GM Radio. I am Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. My guest is Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, senior writer for them, and we have a great conversation going a lot of different directions with the varying situations going on at different elements of the playoff picture. We talk about both conferences in a lot of depth and also the ripple effects, the consequences that the resolution of this playoffs could have on various different franchises. Spent a lot of time on the Clippers and various other teams. The Paul George situation was one that I found fascinating. Ben, of course, has good insight on that. We also talk about the disparity between the conferences and a lot of other other elements to the conversation. Runs just under an hour, brought to you by Mood. Go to HelloMood, HelloMood.com, and use the promo code REALGM to get 20% off your first order plus a free THCA pre-roll. And Prize Picks. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Lots of great stuff here. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Danny. Like, the very best time of the year is right around the corner, isn't it?
It is, and this year I'm actually a lot more excited about the last week plus of the regular season than I usually am. A lot of times this is like playing out the string, but the combination of real races and real stakes for those races makes this so much more compelling.
Oh, I'm with you, especially, I mean, in the Western Conference, I would say more so than almost anywhere else, just because you've got so many big stars potentially in this play-in race or the race for six, however you want to look at it. The Eastern Conference definitely got a boost with Joel Embiid coming back from injury and making that thing a lot more interesting with Philadelphia's win over Miami, too. But, I mean, I've been trying to do prep work like I always do, like book hotels for every scenario, you know, for the various playing games. Danny, I've got reservations in, like, six different cities, man. It's not...
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think there are a lot of places that we'd like to go in this conversation. And I want to start it with your choice. What do you think is the biggest story in the NBA right now?
Well, I do think it's the Western Conference play-in race, just because of the personalities involved and the levels of investment in the key stars, or around the key stars, I should say. And then, you know, stepping back from that, what potential fallout there could be if some of these teams fall on their faces, right? So, like, right now, for example, you've got Dallas and Phoenix that are, you know, in guaranteed playoff spots as we speak. That's subject to change by the time we get to the end of the regular season. If the Mavericks were to somehow not escape the play-in tournament after this incredible run by Luka recently, especially after all of their investments at the trade deadline, after trading for Kyrie Irving last year, I mean, that's an utter disaster for them as an organization, right? Phoenix, I think they're setting up, you know, with an awful lot to lose here. After making the Kevin Durant trade, doubling down with the Bradley Beal trade, tripling down with the coaching change, quadrupling down with a whole bunch of moves at the deadline, you know, with their supporting cast as well, going to grab Nurkic, you know, all of that, you know, they're still kind of spinning their tires. They could be out in the play-in tournament too. It's very possible. Of course, the Lakers and the Warriors with LeBron and Steph, you know, similar, you know, just kind of black marks on the legacy. If they were not to make the real play, the playoffs rather, if they were to go home early. So I just think there's, especially in LeBron's case, there's some decisions coming this summer. Does he sign the long-term contract? I think for Golden State, it's more about, can you stick with the same core group, or do you have to make some real fundamental changes? if things don't go well. I guess just to summarize it, you know, between the star power of Luka, LeBron, Durant, and Steph, not everybody can be winners here. And I think with the losers, there's going to have to be fallout by the time we reach July, right?
There's going to have to be some. And I've wondered a lot, and this will also dovetail with a team that is not necessarily in that mix that I'll talk about in a second, with how patient some of these individuals are going to be. And I talked about this with over the last couple weeks with Dan Feldman and Mo Nikhil, but part of what makes this our world so fascinating and from a basketball perspective is how many different people's analysis and opinions actually matter. So for example, with the, let's use the Clippers, because that was the team I was going to go to with this as another good example, where it matters what Paul George thinks of what happens the rest of this year and what he thinks of the Clippers moving forward. It also matters what Steve Ballmer thinks. It also matters what Lawrence Frank thinks. And if those individuals are not on the same page, then there is a very different outcome than if they are. And so it's similar with LeBron and the Lakers. It's similar. And then with the Warriors, it's a little more unilateral because Steph and Draymond are not up for negotiation this year. Clay is. But that is, but those circumstances. And so you're right with the fallout. And like Luka is obviously his own thing too. So there's a part of me, other than in the cases where the rubber has to meet the road, like LeBron and Paul George, that maybe some of these cans will get at least partially kicked down the road. But you know these conversations are going to happen.
Well, for sure. And I think you've got some, you know, pretty volatile situations potentially developing in the ownership ranks, right? Like with Dallas, for example, they're in this transition kind of Cuban era. They've, you know, really bet a lot on this season. If that backfires, you know, who is in charge? Who's making the calls? Exactly how does that get sorted out? Well, you know, TBD. You look at Phoenix with Matt Ishbia, an awful lot of headlines about him and his business practices in the mortgage industry recently. Clearly not a man for patience, right? And clearly a guy willing to take big swings and gamble. How would he respond to a play-in round exit? Wouldn't that be just utterly embarrassing for somebody in his spot? I would think so, based on how much you know, momentum he tried to generate here over the last 12 months. You know, with Golden State, I do think there's probably some reality has set in here over these last couple of years of like, yes, your core guys are going to age. The best years are behind you. It's going to be okay. But I've never known Joe Lacob as a guy who likes to settle. You know, I mean, this is the whole life is not sure. So I expect them to be active this summer if things don't go well in this postseason. And then with LeBron, there's just so many questions swirling around him, right? It's like, is it L.A. or not L.A.? I think is number one. What's going on with Bronny? As we discuss, you know, as we tape this, you know, Bronny has just declared for the draft, but also declared to enter in the transfer portal. So he could be at somewhere besides USC after their coaching change, or he could potentially get drafted somewhere. Will that impact LeBron's decision-making? Totally open question heading into this summer. And I just think things are going to look a lot differently for any of these teams. If they make a run to the West Finals, like, say, the Lakers did last year or the Mavericks did a couple years ago, versus if they face plant and have to really ask themselves, are they good enough heading into next season to try to run things back, or do they really have to shake things up in a big way? The Clippers are a great example of this too, by the way. I think Dallas is going to take care of them in the first round if that's the 4-5 matchup. And then at that point, after you've traded for Harden, after you've extended Kawhi Leonard, you've got this big decision looming with Paul George. I mean, that's another one that's ripe for, you know, some fireworks.
You and I believe it was the conversation with you. You talked, this is years and years ago, you and I've been doing this for a long time, talked about the concept of basketball mortality. And I think that Paul George, his decision over the next 4 months is a truly fascinating one for that. And my general policy is I want players to do whatever they feel is best for them, and that I generally will only criticize them if they complain about the reaping what they sowed. And so with Paul George, he made his way, though that was technically via trade, though he has re-upped in LA, generally the area of his birth, though you can have arguments about Palmdale and LA and all that, but Southern California. but for PG, the question that he may be asking himself, and I think he should, is, okay, these are going to be my last years as a really good player in the league, assuming he signs for a reasonable term. Clearly, there are benefits to staying with the Clippers. Probably the money is the best. They're opening a new arena. You can be one of the tentpoles of the franchise. Honestly, he probably gets his number retired if that's something that matters to him, just because of the nature of the Clippers' history. But there is a very reasonable argument that that if your goal is to play the best basketball, to be on the best basketball teams, as great as Kawhi Leonard is, that plug and playing Paul George in Philly would be better. The Philadelphia 76ers with Paul George over the next 4 years would be better than the LA Clippers with Paul George over the next 4 years. But how much that matters to him, I genuinely have no idea.
No, it's kind of a mini-me version of LeBron and the Lakers from a few years ago, where I was making the case like, hey, staying with the Lakers after they've depleted a lot of their trade assets and, you know, bet on Russell Westbrook, that's not actually LeBron's best path to a title. That wound up proving true. Like, you know, he hasn't come particularly close since then in the last 2 years, but there's so much when it comes to business, off-court interest, family interest, and those kinds of things that tend to serve as a magnet for, you know, stars in L.A. We see a lot of stars want to come to L.A., not as many want to leave L.A., right? And I think for Paul George, you mentioned some of the character stuff that would tie him to the Clippers. His popularity with the Clippers, you know, sometimes it feels like it's more than Kawhi's. You know, he's been a much more assertive and vocal kind of spokesman for that organization than Kawhi has. I think he tends to get a lot of cheers at games. In some cases, Kawhi's kind of still a blank slate for people. You know, I think there's a lot of respect from the fan base towards Kawhi, but he's been a very difficult player to love because of the injury issues and how he kind of keeps himself at a distance. So not only is he going to potentially get his jersey number retired, Paul George, that is, I could see him being like the first statue outside of Intuit Dome, right? If he signs a long-term contract, retires with the Clippers. I mean, you can even see the bonds he has with that team on, based on his podcast guests, right? Steve Ballmer, Jerry West. Like, yeah, this is a guy who's become very ingrained in that Clipper culture, and they've really needed an advocate here in Los Angeles, where they're always going to be overshadowed by the Lakers. Here's my concern, though, and I don't even think this is about who Paul George is going to be 2 years down the road. My concern is about Paul George right now. You know, when he's getting guarded by some of these younger, more aggressive wings who really get up into him, he struggles in a way that he did not struggle 2 years ago to do almost anything, right? Like, he gets real flustered with the ball. You know, you can crowd him. You can keep him, you know, well outside of the three-point arc when he's got the ball in his hands. And that's just, you know, a sign of aging. He doesn't have that quick pop first step maybe like he used to in the past. And I think that's how you're going to see him get defended in these playoffs. I think people are going to be real aggressive with Paul and say, hey, you have to put the ball on the deck, you know, beat us off the dribble, and you know, be willing to take the pounding in traffic and get to the free throw line. And we'll see if he wants to do that. You know, he has such a polished perimeter game. It's such a smooth and pretty one to look at. He's a very efficient three-point shooter. But he's not the overall offensive weapon that he used to be, you know, even when he first got to Los Angeles, or even, you know, a couple of years ago when they had that Western Conference Finals run. So, you know, I think that's something to keep in mind here, both for a suitor like Philadelphia, but also for the Clippers. I would not pay Paul George max money for max years. There's got to be a negotiation on this contract just based on the state of his game where it's at currently. You know, I think the other thing, though, you know, beyond how he fits with the Clippers and just sort of where his game is at, you know, I think there's an awful lot of goodwill coming from ownership side towards Paul in terms of feeling a burden to have kind of a face of the franchise, to have something to sell to season ticket holders. And the Clippers are making a huge deal about the wall, how they want to have this great environment heading into Inglewood. And if you lose your signature guy this summer and you don't really have a great way to replace him, and it's just sort of like, okay, it's going to be Kawhi and James now, that's how we're going to do it, I'm not sure they're going to be able to build that momentum like they want to. So I think this could be a case where they're stuck without a ton of leverage, and Paul's going to wind up getting a contract that, to me, might be a little bit too generous.
Well, if there's anyone who can stomach a generous contract, even with their overall financial situation, it is Steve Ballmer. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's willing to do it. And you brought up a lot of the other factors that are super important. And those are always important to consider in a circumstance like this, and that could draw him there. And, like, I brought up the idea that Philly could be better with Paul George than the Clippers are. It also could be better for Paul George, just in the way that Embiid draws attention, and Maxey, who's grown so much as a player, and the possibility. I mean, I would say Embiid, unfortunately, due to injury, like, I would say per minute, it's hard for him to do better than this year. But, like, Maxey's still growing, and so the arc of that franchise could be fundamentally different. They also have more of their resources, because theoretically, if Paul George went there, it wouldn't require the sacrifice that the Clippers had to do to get him and Kawhi, where they, you know, that's a part of why this team has been so limited. It was worth it because you've got those players, and we wouldn't be talking about the Clippers in the same way right now if they hadn't have done that. But I'm sure they'd love to have Shea and everything else. So real quick on that, Danny,
who wouldn't rather play with Tyrese Maxey than this version of James Harden? You know, I think that's such a clear benefit in Philly's side. You know, Harden, like Paul George in some ways, his game has really atrophied down the stretch of this season. I mean, he's not performing as well as he did when he kind of, you know, soon after he got acclimated with the Clippers. And his offensive game has got very predictable. It's challenging three-pointers off the dribble, and then it sort of drives to nowhere into traffic where he's not getting as many calls as he used to, certainly nothing compared to his prime. And then he's also not really wanting to finish above the rim or through people going to the rim. And so a lot of times they're seeing drive and kick passes, drive and dump off passes. Every once in a while, he'll have a nice, you know, he'll set somebody up in the paint for a dunk, and it will feel a little bit like the old James Harden. But, you know, from a gravity standpoint, he's not nearly what he used to be a couple years ago. And he's just not nearly as threatening of a scorer, even as he was, you know, during the Brooklyn days or the Philadelphia days. So, yeah, I think if you are trying to maximize your possibilities of winning a championship, you're taking Maxey and you're taking Embiid over this Clippers group. I just don't know if that's really the top priority for Paul George. You know, he seems very comfortable in LA. His family's always around the team. He's got the podcast studio. You know, it's a nice setup for him.
It is, and all those things matter. And it also, of course, that's a lot on the table for Philly because of how the market has thinned for players who could really make a difference. Not that they have to do it through free agency. They could do it through trade or anything else. Lots more to discuss, but first a message from Prize Picks. NBA playoffs are obviously right on the horizon. You can get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason. And you can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with basketball, hockey, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy app. I really like that Prize Picks is player specific to my intuition. I think that works a little bit better, and it's very straightforward. You find the player projection that you find interesting, and then you just go more or less on that number, and that's easy to connect with. And of course, it'll make the playoffs more fun, though they're plenty of fun anyway. And the way that you can check out Prize Picks is you download their app today, and then you use the code CLNS. Because that gets you a first deposit match up to $100. It also tells Prize Picks that you came from us. So download the Prize Pick app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. But I want to go back to that bottom of the West thing, because part of what makes that notable for me is that we don't know how the top of the West is going to shake out. And it is fair to assert that some of those teams are a little bit more starry than they are actually great. But I mean, we've seen some really strong moments. Nate and I broadcast the game where the Suns, where Devin Booker dropped 37 in the first half against the Pelicans, and they should have won that game comfortably. They eventually came back. So the combination of those having the star power and the ripple effects for those franchises, but also the fact that some teams are going to make it out of that, and they will at least be more competitive than the average 7-8, and we've seen this at points with the play-in. Of course, last year is the most prominent example. And so the idea that not only can it's not just like, I think about sometimes the teams that make the NCAA tournament, they're happy to make it, maybe they get one big win, but they're not relevant when we get to the Elite Eight, the Final Four. Like, these teams, I don't think it's the most likely outcome, but it is a possible outcome that they upend the playoff landscape as well in the rounds that count.
Well, there's no question, because I look at the top seeds in the Western Conference, and you know, there's been a clear top three, you know, for a while, right? But Karl Anthony Towns is injured, Jamal Murray has missed some time, and Oklahoma City's dealt with Shea's injury, right? Well, I mean, if you're talking about like major questions heading into the postseason that you're going to want answers to, or you're going to want to know exactly where you stand with those guys if you're going to try to make a deep postseason run, all those guys are critical. You know, I was at the Nuggets versus Clippers game last night, and the Clippers came out flat like they practically always do, and they didn't have Kawhi. But the non-Jokic minutes were just a disaster for Denver.
Yes, they were.
Right? And so it just reinforced this idea that if they're going to go back-to-back, because they didn't make any major roster additions last summer, it's going to take a fully healthy Murray every single game in the playoffs playing 40-plus minutes to get that done, especially when you're looking at the gauntlet that they would have to go through. I think this year's Western Conference field for them is much tougher than last year's, and I think if the Celtics come out of the East, it's going to be a much tougher matchup in the finals than the Miami Heat were in last year's finals. So they basically just have to have Murray, or I don't think they're going to get it done, right? And so, you could say some similar things about Minnesota and their injuries, and Oklahoma City needs to get Shea really going on all cylinders. And I look at a player like Chet Holmgren, phenomenal season, rookie of the year candidate. I would have Victor over him. I think defensive player of the year candidate as well for Chet. I don't know if you want to go that far and put him over a player like Gobert or even Wemby, but I think he deserves to be in that conversation based on, kind of the leap that Oklahoma City has made defensively and how much he just does on a nightly basis. But this guy hit the rookie wall, man. Like, he just doesn't have the legs on a night-to-night basis to be as productive, over the last month as he was during the first couple months of the season. And so to me, that's going to be a challenge. Not only, does a team like Oklahoma City not have the experience of having done it before together because they're so young, but they've got a key backline cog who just hasn't been the same guy for a month. So if I'm a team like the Lakers, big and physical inside, I don't think I'm afraid of the Oklahoma City Thunder if that's how that matchup shakes out. And there's similar doubts for everybody. Look, I think Denver is going to be able to get through the first round kind of no matter who they draw, but I think it could get pretty interesting for them after that.
There's a lot of variance that goes on with all these teams. And a point that you brought up with OKC, and it's also loosely true with Minnesota, is that they don't have a lot of playoff experience. OKC has very little, but Minnesota doesn't have that much. Chris Finch doesn't have that much. And it is a different animal. And I think back to the old idea that styles makes fights. And part of why I'm so excited about this right now, and I will be as things move forward, is we don't know any of these matchups. And so there are certain ones that look a little juicy for some teams or look a little bit harsh for some teams. Like the Pelicans, for example. Like, I think who they play matters a lot because their scheme is so aggressive that it works against some teams, it doesn't work against others. And I'm really interested in that. And so how we get this, and because there's movement on both sides, it isn't just like there are some years like the Clippers have been famous for maneuvering this way, where it's like, okay, if we lose this game, then we're getting this team. That may happen. It's just not clear yet. And so the movement that could happen there, and because you have these incentives of trying to get firm up your place, and presumably the six is better than the seven and all that type of stuff. So that'll all be really interesting. And I think that also dovetails with what I think is the other really big story going on in the NBA right now. And it's in part two of these teams played last night, the race for the sixth seed in the East. And the reason why that matters is it's going to be really hard for the Pacers, the Heat, or the Sixers to get better than sixth. It is technically possible, depending on how the teams above them fare over the next week plus. But that's the way the world that I'm living in right now. And for all three of them, there is an intense pressure to get the sixth seed because, unlike the West, where things are in flux, the East is pretty settled at the top. And even though the Bucks have lost these weird games without Damian Lillard over the last few days, the Boston Celtics are the best team in the Eastern Conference. The Bucks have been very dangerous, and then the three through five are kind of a mess. They're dealing with health issues. They're dealing with everything else. So, as Philly, as Miami, as Indiana, You need to push as hard as reasonably possible to get that sixth seed, because not only do you get it, but then if you get an easier matchup, you become on the opposite side of the Celtics, so it's easier to make, theoretically, an Eastern Conference Finals run. So there's just so much incentive for all of those teams to push hard with. And if you lose that, even if you push hard and you lose, well, then congratulations, you get into the play-in, you have a one-off against the other team, and then you may even have to end up facing the Celtics you'll face the Celtics or the Bucks in the first round.
Well, so what you're describing is exactly what the NBA had intended when they created this play-in format. they were really intent on this idea of graduating incentives so that each spot would have something to play for, right? Like if you finish 10, at least you're going to have a chance, right? If you finish 9, you get to host the second play-in game, or sorry, the first play-in game, I should say. If you finish 8 and you lose the first play-in game, you get to host the second play-in game. If you finish 7th, you get to host the first play-in game. If you finish 6th, you get the automatic playoff spot. Like they had kind of intended that, so each step of the way would have a little bit extra incentive. And, you know, the NBA, like, they have plans sometimes that don't work at all. Like, All-Star Weekend. Hey, we're going to have a great show. They tell everybody for 6 months, right? And then they come out there, and it's, like, one of the worst shows of all time, right? And everybody's just like, God, why did we do this? And then, you know, a month later, Adam Silver's telling Charles Barkley, you know, we might just not have an All-Star game. We might just try to turn this into, like, a weekend festival and just give up, right? So their plans don't always work. But this is a case where the plan has worked perfectly. And Embiid's comeback really makes it so much more interesting, and Philadelphia's win over Miami makes it more interesting because Philly has a very, very weak remaining strength of schedule. They have a whole bunch of teams with nothing to play for, so they have a real shot to potentially win out. Now, Miami,
Ben, just to put it out there, this is how soft their schedule is. The average winning percentage of the Sixers' remaining opponents as we record this on Friday is 34.6%. So they are not exactly playing the best of the best.
Well, and John Hollinger had a great column this week about how, like, the worst teams in the NBA, you know, the 8 teams that aren't really going to, you know, really matter, are losing games at just, like, a historic rate recently. Like, Toronto hasn't really won in a month. Like, the only teams that they're beating up, Utah has, you know, lost 10 straight. Portland had a super long losing streak until recently. Like, all those kinds of teams are only beating each other. They're not beating any good teams. And so that's a wide open door for Philly because they play a bunch of those kinds of teams down the stretch. I mean, if you're Philly, you would way rather play, you know, if it's Cleveland or Orlando or the banged up Knicks versus, like, just trying to throw Embiid straight into a gauntlet with Giannis or the Celtics, who have completely owned him in the playoffs the 3 previous times they've met, right? So, I mean, that's a no-brainer. Philly should be going all out to try to get to 6. And if they can't get to 6, they should be trying really hard to get to 7, you know, because that could potentially, you know, at least have them avoid Boston. So the system is working as designed. And, you know, I hope all these teams keep gunning. It was a crushing collapse from the Heat last night in the fourth quarter. Kind of inexplicable. They're in the control of that game. I think they give up something like a 13-0 run late. They can barely score in the final 8 minutes. You know, even though Jimmy's playing, Bam's playing, Rozier's on the court. Like, it was just, you know, kind of a catastrophe. If they don't finish with the 6 or if they fall to the 8, you know, and with potentially the worst case scenario, they're going to look back at that game and say, we really, really blew it in that fourth quarter.
It was an offensive failure to me for Miami. I mean, they also went out, I think it was like a Philly 12-0 run, something 11-0 to start the game. And Miami just, they had stretches where they couldn't score. And I do have real concerns about Jimmy Butler. The performance that he put together in the playoffs in the last 2 of the last 3 years are, you know, you have to hold that and remember it, that he can do that. But I was hoping and expecting that we would see something more like that Jimmy Butler in a game that had such obvious incentives. And
right,
he, you know, I don't think that his intensity level was terrible, especially relative to regular season Jimmy, but it not coming together, and Joel protects the paint very well, things are a little bit different. He just, like, the game wasn't being bent to his will the way that we saw so much during last year's postseason. And I've had this idea with the Heat. It in many ways parallels the Western Conference teams that we're talking about. I had this conversation about a month ago with Keith Smith. It's just like, or maybe it was with Jared Dubin, about, like, maybe these teams just aren't as good as they were, and we're holding a little bit back. But with the Heat, like, I mean, they've had some really good performances, and I am worried about their offense, but I'm not worried in the slightest about their defense. So that could really loom with them. And then with the Pacers, I mean, they've been in this awkward phase where, like, Haliburton's playing. It seems like a significant part of that is to maintain his all NBA eligibility, which I completely understand from a financial perspective. I believe the rough estimate of the difference for that is like $50 million for him. So hell yeah, if that's what you want to do, is what you want to do. But the Pacers, you know, they have Siakam, they have everything that's going on there. So it's like, in some ways, they feel like the forgotten team because they have so much less star power, as great as Haliburton's been. But they have a part to play in this too. They have some winnable games. And then OKC them, the Pacers playing OKC in their next game, that might end up being fortuitous timing, because you look at their schedule, you're like, oh, that's kind of tough. But they may get some of these teams at the right time.
Yeah, I think Indiana also tends to get overlooked here, in part because of inexperience of Halliburton in the playoffs. I think also there's going to be a stigma when you're so offensive-oriented and so bad on defense, like, yeah. Oh, you're just a regular season team, right? People will just kind of cast you off. So that could make them as a sneaky threat to Cleveland, Orlando, New York, teams that are either grinding-type teams or, you know, maybe not able to keep up in shootouts with you, potentially, given the current state of their rosters. I mean, that could make them a sleeper. So, of course, they're wanting to try to fight for that sixth as well.
Plenty more to discuss, but first, the message from Mood. We are now in April, so you can think about how you want to celebrate 420, April 20th, and little known trivia is that I went to the high school that claims that they invented the term, and if you want to go through that, you can. But there are a lot of different ways to celebrate it, and Mood can help you achieve just the right high with their federally legal flower, gummies, vapes, and more. So you can browse by different moods, get 20% off your first order, and a free THCA pre-roll with the promo code REALGM at hellomood.com. I've tried a series of their products now. I mostly focus in the sleep area. Sleeping better is something that matters a lot to me. I've been impressed, but also they have some euphoric products that I've enjoyed as well. So really enjoy what Mood is doing, and it was very convenient. They have a lot of options. I would definitely recommend checking it out. And if you do so, which you definitely should, go to hellomood.com, HELLOMOOD.com. Use the code REALGM, which tells them that you came from us, and gets you 20% off your first order, plus a free THCA pre-roll. So check it out at Mood.
What's interesting to me, though, is Milwaukee. And I think people have tended to cast the East over these last couple of years, especially as, like, it's sort of Boston, Milwaukee, and Miami, right? Like, it kind of tends to come down to those teams. And Philly's had its share of moments, too, but they've never made the Eastern Conference Finals. This Milwaukee team is playing terribly together recently. Like, and I'm not sure exactly why Damian Lillard hasn't caught more heat for how this season has gone, but him and Giannis do not make each other better. It's not that they make each other worse. They just kind of both are out there operating. There's no whole is greater than the sum of the parts coming from that superstar partnership. And people understandably want to be patient. Like, you don't make that kind of a judgment in December. Danny, it's April, right?
It is.
They've had three different coaches. We've been watching these games for 4 or 5 months. Like, if somebody was going to unlock it, it was going to have been unlocked. And I think it's a very natural situation where it's two alphas who need to have the ball. And again, it's not a negative way. It's not that they're doing it at each other's expense, but Lillard was the man for a decade, and he is not wired to be a number two guy. He's just not. Giannis has been the man since he kind of rose to prominence, became a most improved player guy, you know, whatever that was, 5, 6, 7 years ago, and he is not going to become a number two guy. So when they get into late game situations, like, it's always kind of a question of, like, is Giannis even going to get to touch the ball, right? And then with Lillard, his flaws have become Milwaukee's flaws. He can't guard anybody on the perimeter. They try to talk him up over and over on the defensive end. Oh, you know, he's showing greater commitment. Oh, he's doing this, that, and the other. He's too slow. He gets blown by, and he doesn't work hard to close out a lot of the times. He gives up a lot of open three-pointers in key spots. So I think that they've sort of gotten this huge benefit of the doubt that they actually don't deserve. And I think that they're ripe for the taking. Like, if it's 2-7 Miami, I think Miami's got a real shot. Now, I do think Milwaukee would be able to take care of Philly. But, you know, maybe I'm giving them too much of the benefit of the doubt in that spot. Maybe Philly's a little bit more of a challenge there.
I mean, here's what I'll say with Philly. I don't think they have anyone to guard Maxey. Like,
right. They don't.
That series, like, Maxey could end up being, like, putting up some wild numbers in that series. And I like the point that you made about Lillard's flaws becoming the Bucks' flaws. That was even more present when their transition defense was awful under Adrian Griffin, where, like, because that's been a weakness for Lillard over the last half decade, if not even more than that, just because he doesn't really get back. It's not really what he's doing. He's also at times been on teams that didn't really have much to play for. It's, you know, he's a bad defensive player, and it hasn't mattered as much because his teams haven't mattered as much. But, like, for example, we don't fixate on that with him in the way that we do some other guys. But he's, you know, he's been bad pretty much his entire career. Yeah, and has physical talent. The point about Giannis and Lillard is fascinating because when you think about basketball conceptually, there is a synergy with those two players that makes intuitive sense. You can, you know, you can use them in screening actions together. You can't switch any action involving the two of them because what are you going to do with that? And so theoretically, and superstar pairings kind of can work like this. It's like, are they synergistic? Are they not synergistic? Or are they just kind of neutral? And so I expected Lillard and Giannis to help each other, to make life easier, at least on the offensive end. And
me too.
And that hasn't materialized as much as I hoped. There are some elements in crunch time just because of Giannis's limitations. But other than that, there's something there. I don't think that they've gone as far as the negative area, but maybe it ends up being something. I'm not comparing them as players at all. I always thought this was Scottie Brooks's big mistake with the Thunder, the Westbrook Durant, is like, okay, these guys don't really make each other better, so stagger them and then you have better players on the floor. I thought that the Bucks were going to be much better than that with those guys. I thought it was going to be like, oh, you play them together because they make each other's lives easier. It hasn't quite been all of that. I mean, Giannis is having a more effective season, but I think that's because, offensively, because he's not taking the threes that he never makes anymore. So, like, that helps statistically. But yeah, it is a frustration. And the parallel in some ways with that, of like you talked about how they have had different coaches, is some of the Celtics crunch time issues that have now persisted over different coaches too. It's like, maybe there is something that needs to get worked out, but I will, at least for right now, I will take a bet on talent depending on who they play.
Yeah, you know, I think having seen the Bucks play only a handful of times in person this year, they also struck me as kind of one of those teams where, you know, the guys are colleagues, they're not teammates. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I just didn't get a really warm chemistry vibe, and you could probably chalk that up to a lot of new faces, a lot of turnover midseason in terms of roster pieces. And then I think, you know, some injury issues to key guys that kind of prevent some of the chemistry from developing. So I just look at them, despite their record, as just being this kind of unfinished team in transition heading into the playoffs. And typically, even with stars, you don't really want to be that. You want to have kind of everything ironed out, and they just don't necessarily feel like they've got that. And so I do think that they're vulnerable in the first round, and then definitely in the second round, depending on how the matchups shake out, it's definitely a team to circle as, you know, a potential upset threat. The other concern I have about them, and, you know, Doc gets a lot of talk about the collapses, 3-1 and all this, but I think my concern with him as the Bucks coach in the playoffs is that his default is to always trust the most experienced guys, right? Like,
sure.
Especially when it comes to role players. And, like, some of the guys, I mean, if it's Jay Crowder, Patrick Beverley, I mean, just kind of go down the list here, like, some of these guys would be very difficult to trust with huge minutes in key situations in the postseason, and I just know that's going to be his default, right? And so I look at this year as almost a wasted year from a cultivation standpoint because, you know, they had a guy in Andre Jackson Jr. I thought could actually give them, you know, some real important stuff early in this year. Just kind of gets thrown by the wayside. They don't have the world's greatest young prospects, but I think that there's a chance, depending on who they play in the postseason, where they start to look a little bit old, they start to look a little bit a step slow, they can't necessarily keep up. And I know Doc's just going to double down on experience and the trust factor, and that's bit him before in the postseason, and I could see it biting this team this year.
Definitely a concern, and I think back to like Montrezl Harrell in that Nuggets series a few years ago as an example of how that can work. And what compounds that issue is that the Bucks aren't that versatile, and so you could run into a situation where they don't have a great option, and he chooses the wrong one anyway, and so it just ends up compounding it. And so it is fortunate for the Bucks that they don't probably, assuming they stay at the two, they're probably not going to get like a super athletic team. There is a possibility that they, you know, like they could play a fast-paced team like the Pacers, who beat them and the Celtics in the play-in tournament, albeit a different format and everything else. But it's, you know, like there are certain elements of like Philly and Miami that could actually work to their advantage, where those teams, they aren't as nuanced to defend, though some of the stuff that Nurses run with Embiid is really fun. And like they could, and that would be really fascinating from the perspective of the coach that Milwaukee, in my eyes, should have hired versus the one that they didn't, and then, you know, ended up with Doc Rivers, because of course
that was. And it's also the hospital series. You know, it's the doc versus the nurse. I mean, it's just as juicy.
I love that. And so, again, the idea of the incentives in play. And while I think that the Celtics and Bucks, and to a lesser extent, the Heat, like, their teams are probably pretty stable. I don't think that a playoff result will, like, change too much about how their vision is of the franchise for those teams. It's just they're pretty stable. I talked about that a little bit with Dan Feldman last week. But they're still, like, these teams, other than the Celtics, have narrow windows. Like, it's a part of the Bucks that is so challenging, is that Giannis is young, but everyone else on this team is old. You know, this is Lillard's age 33 season, Brooke Lopez's age 35 season, Middleton's 32, but his legs are probably older than that functionally at this point. And for the Bucks in particular, they don't have young players in the pipeline who look ready to take on. So, like, they don't have the next Brooke Lopez. They don't even have, like, a backup Brooke Lopez or something like that. And so each year that passes, and this may or may not be one of those years for some of these teams, you're not getting it back. And the expectation has to be that next year will be a harder road, either in terms of your own team being weaker in quality or other teams being stronger.
100%. Their window is right now. There's no question. And when I'm looking at their potential first-round matchups, like, let's say they were to get Indiana, if you can't stop plan A from Milwaukee, which is Giannis dunk parade, Giannis at the rim, you know, over and over and over again, you won't beat Milwaukee. And I don't think Indiana can stop that. You know, even with the Siakam addition, I just don't think interior defense, they don't have enough depth. They don't have enough integrity with those pieces to be able to keep Giannis from doing whatever he wants in the paint as a scorer. So Milwaukee will win that series. But I look at Philadelphia and I look at Miami especially, and, you know, even, you know, looking ahead past that to Boston and saying all those teams are going to force Milwaukee to go to plan B, to plan C, to plan D. Lillard's supposed to be plan B, but I just don't really trust it right now. And it has not gone well for him this season. I think he's been arguably the most disappointing individual player, putting injuries aside, of anybody in the entire NBA this season, just based on his performance and his impact with the Bucks. So, you know, if you can stop plan A, you got a chance to take the Bucks out. That's really kind of what happened with Miami last year. Plan A got hurt in Giannis, and there was nothing else going on, and they crumbled pretty quickly. So that's how I would look at it for, you know, the play-in matchups from Milwaukee's side, is I am praying for the Indiana Pacers if I'm the Milwaukee Bucks.
Lillard's disappointing season is important for the franchise and for everything else, because, like, this is supposed to be the time. And if it's not, then when is it going to be? And they have serious financial commitments to everybody else and to Lillard.
Hey, can I ask you a question on that?
Of course.
Are we going to look back and say maybe Portland didn't get a perfect king's ransom for Lillard, but they sold at the exact right moment? Is that how this trade's going to get remembered?
I think it's definitely going to be a part of the story, because, I mean, maybe they, I don't know that they could have gotten much more, like, a year earlier or something like that, but the definitely, I think selling later would have been a big problem for them, because you think Lillard's contract, and generally speaking, my assumption is this originated from the Russell Westbrook trade, the one where he went to the Wizards and then to the Lakers, where teams don't always think about the future. So, like, if the player is worth it now, but looking at, you know, for next year, Lillard's getting $48.8 million and then has 2 years after that, assuming he picks up his player option. You could see some teams feeling a little bit dicey about that for 34, 35, and 36-year-old Damian Lillard, who, in my opinion, is not one of the, like, two best point guards in the league right now, probably. And that point guard is being charitable to him, because now there are great offensive players at a lot of different positions. Like, I don't want to do the, like, where is he as an offensive player rankings off the cuff without having intense research on it. But, like, he hasn't been that guy. And that is a huge concern. And Giannis can make that life easier. But they're not overtly dominant, like, even in their best moments. Like, that's been something that's been concerning for me about the Bucks, is, like, I think they can handle stuff, but they also lose weird games. They also, like, lose games that they should win, all that type of stuff. And so, yeah, I'm not all the way there on them, but part of why the Bucks are still kind of well positioned is that there aren't teams in the East. You brought up the Heat and the Sixers, who definitely could put a charge of them. But the 3-4-5, just not really having a team that has, to me, conference final sizzle. And I'll include, because the Knicks don't have Randall at all. And OG Anunoby, we don't know what version of him we're going to get. I don't see the Magic. I don't see the Cavs as that type of team that they can get to the conference finals. But, like, First of all, I don't think that, assuming they face a healthy opponent in the conference finals, that they would win it. So, like, that you want, that's the kind of upset fodder that's really fun, where it's like, oh, like, what about this team? You know, kind of like that young Thunder team that beat the Spurs or something like that. There isn't a great foil for the Bucks, though they could lose to teams that are worse than a great foil.
Well, I mean, look, the East is so weak this year. I mean, and it gives Boston credit for taking care of its business. I mean, they have done exactly what you should do through a weak conference, running up 60 wins, you know, potentially 65. You know, I actually think that they maybe should be viewed as the title favorite just because they are going to have a significantly easier path going through the Eastern Conference than any of the West teams. And because they do have the depth, they can survive some level of injury issues. I just think that they might be the safest bet to win the title this year, despite, you know, all the harping that's going to go about their late game issues. And which, by the way, they've had pretty good late game offensive efficiency rating in the clutch this season. So,
yes.
I think when I look at this Eastern Conference, and I take a step back, you know, the NBA has been so revenue focused, especially under Adam Silver, right? The last 10 years, when you look at all the gambling stuff, you know, the play-in tournament, the in-season tournament, I mean, so much of this stuff is about revenue. But they're looking at a situation where they very easily could have LeBron and Steph Curry, their two biggest stars, out before the playoffs even start because the West is so deep and so talented. And if it's not those guys, then we're not going to get a Zion. We're not going to get a Kevin Durant. Maybe we're not going to get a Luka. Like, there's just not enough spots in the Western Conference playoff bracket for all of the big stars who are trying to contend for that right now. You look at the Eastern Conference bracket, I mean, no disrespect, like, Chicago and Atlanta are playing in play-in games. Nobody wants to watch that. Those guys don't even want to be in those games. And that's laying it on a little bit thick. I mean, we saw some heart from the Bulls in last year's play-in tournament. But if you were trying to make this as revenue-focused of a business as possible, you could not look at the gap between the West and the East this year. And it's been a consistent gap, maybe not this wide, but it's been pretty consistent. The West has been more dominant than the East for 25 straight years. And look at the playoff format and say, why are we handicapping ourselves by not having the biggest stars and the best teams in this bracket? Why are we sending people home early from the tough conference and granting in, you know, some of these other places just automatic bids into the postseason? It would be like if college football had equal spots for the SEC and what used to be the Pac-12. It makes no sense, Danny. Like, it's just crazy. So, you know, I don't know. If I was as revenue focused as the NBA has been, if that was my top thing, I would really think long and hard about this this gap between the East and West and see if there is a way you could even use the play-in tournament, you know, use some extra teams from the West to sneak in that way. I don't know exactly how I would do it, but just sticking to this harsh geographic, delineation between East and West, it bites the NBA every time. How many series in the East are you super excited, you know, looking forward to? If Embiid doesn't come back, it's just fast forward straight to the Eastern Conference Finals. That's all anybody cares about, right? In the West, we're going to be pouring over every single one of these play-in games, let alone the first round series. It just seems off to me. Maybe I'm on a tangent. I don't know.
It is something that the league office should think about. I don't know if there's something they should execute. I was actually spitballing some playoff reform ideas with some friends earlier this week, and there are a couple elements of it that are worth at least mentioning, and then we don't need to spend too much time on it. A big reason why this has happened is because, broadly speaking, the Western Conference, especially the major market Western Conference teams, have been better run. And that's not necessarily a high bar when you consider like what the Knicks have been most of the time over the last 25 years. But you think about the small market teams in particular. You know, there aren't as many of the Charlottes and the Detroits in the West. You know, you have, I mean, there, most of those teams kind of they've been competitive at times. The West equivalents have been competitive at times. There are some also rans. And then another concerning part as you look, game this out forward, I pulled up my, you know, this was done in, it was done in December, but my top 10 prospects list from, you know, like guys who are in the league right now. Number one, Victor Wembanyama, Western Conference. Number two, Anthony Edwards, right, Western Conference. Three is Tyrese. He's in the East, though he was originally in the West and shouldn't have been traded away from the West. Holmgren, West. Then, so 1, 2, 4, 6, 7 are all Western Conference guys. And then there are a few East guys like Paolo and Evan Mobley and everything mm-hmm. else. But the expectation is probably that that will persist in some form moving forward. And there will inevitably be guys like Halliburton that break out and everything else like that. But it is a very real concern. It is something that the league will have to do, though this season feels like an outlier just in terms of the severity of the disparity. But there's going to be something there. And I'm interested in where that goes moving forward. Does the league consider something? And it's also like in a year like this, it could be the inspiration for at least spitballing some ideas, because the record disparity actually works. You know, it isn't a circumstance, even though some of those teams have dealt with injuries. Like, the Warriors have 42 wins. So do the Sixers. So, like, if you threw teams like that, like, the Rockets have a better record than both the Bulls and the Hawks. So you could maybe throw something in. I understand from television purposes why they don't want first-round series to be East versus West for TV and for flights, but maybe there's some sort of equitable solution they could get to or something else.
No, it's just crazy when the 10th seed in the West is basically the 6th seed in the East, right? It's like that. And the star power in the West also matches that, and it's just so much more dominant. Now, it is really cool the way it's set up that a player like Paolo can go from being drafted to a team that's been terrible for 5 years straight into the playoffs in two seasons with, minimal moves around him, right? Like, they've just kind of organically built that. They play really hard on defense. Paolo's had some nice moments in the clutch this year to help bring some games home. It's a great coaching job by Jamal Mosley, and boom, now they get to play for something. But you mentioned Wemby. Like, how many big swing trades does San Antonio have to make, along with him being the greatest prospect of the last 20 years, for them to even get into the play-in conversation in the Western Conference next year, right? Like, I anticipate monster year two step forward from Wemby, but, like, if San Antonio just drafts somebody with their lottery pick and decides to just run it back with Vassell and Keldon Johnson, like, they will be lucky to even be in the mix, based on that, that conference disparity. So that doesn't feel great. That seems like it's kind of a problem.
But it could, and this is another reason this happens. Somebody wrote a piece about this years ago, and I thought it was such an astute point, that the West being as strong as it is actually allows some of these teams to build up their asset base because they're out of the playoffs early enough that they can make it happen. And so, like, the Spurs, if they miss an extra year, then they get beyond the picks they're getting from the Hawks and everything else. They'll get another bite at this apple in 25, which is supposed to be better draft class. But I want to go back briefly to Orlando, because I think that we don't know how the postseason is going to end, but it's thrilling that they're even making it. The Orlando Magic are about to make the playoffs, potentially hosting a postseason series where three of their five starters are, I'll use basketball reference age, but are basketball reference age 22 or younger, and then a third or a fourth, Wendell Carter, is 24. And that's really fun. That's really exciting. Jamal Mosley's done a fantastic job. And they're not as sexy or exciting as the Thunder, in part because the Thunder are just a meaningfully better team. But it is worth celebrating.
Oh, no question about it. The most fun thing to discuss about the Magic to me is Jalen Suggs' just defensive wrecking ball ability. Like, that, he's just yeah. awesome on that end, right? But I think Paolo, this is what it really boils down to, is how great can Paolo be, right? And I think coming into the NBA, the guy I really comped him to was Carmelo, because of how dependent he was on the twos and also just the physicality he had with his frame. And I think what we're seeing here, the guy still loves to take a lot of twos. And it's been on my mind because I was covering Alabama's college basketball team, and they're just like analytics obsessed under Coach Nate Oates. And he was describing how he totally overhauled Brandon Miller's shot chart from when Brandon Miller got to Alabama to when he became that number two pick. And he was basically saying, we just cut out all the long twos, turned them into threes, tried to make him a more efficient player, and that's really what helped boost Brandon Miller's stock, in the opinion of his college coach. And I look at Paolo, as good as he is already, and very few guys come in year one and average 20 points a game. Like, that's very difficult to do. He did it. He gets himself to the free throw line a lot because he is that big physical player. He's been a little bit more of a playmaker in year two than I thought he would be, and that's a nice wrinkle for any player who's going to have the ball in his hands as much as he does. But there's still a lot of fat to his shooting diet, and he's still not quite as good of a three-point shooter as I think you need to be if you want to become like one of these top five, top 10 players once you hit your prime. So even though he was like essentially unanimous rookie of the year, an all-star in year two, leading a team in the playoffs, like, the analytics actually don't love Paolo as much as you would think, the advanced stats. And that just tells me that there is a ton of room for growth and untapped potential here, where if he does refine a shot diet, if he continues to maximize his physical advantages in, you know, against spread defenses and get himself to the rim, if he shoots more threes and he can really become a bankable three-point shooter, this guy could have a much higher ceiling than I thought he would when he came in 2 years ago.
There is a lot to be excited about with Paolo. I think that he also is coming around at the right time where these reforms are going to be put in his ear. I don't know whether it's going to be from Mosley or whether it's the analytics team or something else, but like, he can do that. And the Magic already have the defensive foundation of a really good team. I mean, they've done that this year. I think they're second in defense right now, and there isn't a ton of opponent shooting luck in that. It's going
and no
to be
gimmicks.
No gimmicks.
There's no gimmicks on defense. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be can they get to good to very good to great, ideally, with Paolo, maybe Franz, as their best offensive player. And the good news for the Magic is they can add somebody with that fifth starter spot, use some of their resources, cap space, picks, and all that, to get a player if it's not them. But if they can be them, then you're really cooking with gas. Then it becomes like you could get a movement shooter or do something else with that spot. And so for the Magic, they don't have to make those decisions now. I mean, Paolo and Franz are both really young. They're both early 20s, and Suggs is too. But where year four Paolo is, whether he can be like one of the 20, 25, 30 best offensive players in the league, that is going to define whether the Magic are a fun competitive team, kind of like where the Cavs have ended up, where it's like they're good, but you're not really expecting them to make some noise, or if they can be one of those teams that actually competes for the Eastern Conference crown or the NBA title.
You know, correct. And, you know, I think that the Orlando Magic are probably a team that's going to get written off faster than anybody as like one of these teams that could actually win a series this year because of their youth. Because, I mean, like, you know, Paolo hasn't gotten as much attention, I don't think, from the media as he probably feels like he deserves, or Magic fans feel like he deserves. You know, if the Knicks are just going to be shorthanded and not have their guys, that could be a really interesting 4-5 if that's how it shakes out, right?
Suggs versus Brunson would be must-see.
Yeah, if you're drafting anybody to go against Brunson in the entire league, do you take Suggs first right now?
I think I would. It'd be Suggs or maybe Caruso, though the flopping call exaggeration in that series would boggle the mind. Thankfully, that series is not going to happen because, I mean, it would have to be like a wild second rounder or something like that. But
right.
I think that would be really fascinating. And so I want to end this with a question that is both easy and hard, which is you, Ben Golliver, get the chance to will any series. You can pick any two teams. You don't have to pick the round unless you want to. You can will any one series into existence in this postseason. What series do you most want to see?
I have so many. I mean, so just selfishly put these two aside. I would love to see Luka versus the Clippers round three, and I would love to see Joker versus LeBron round two. You know, after, I guess actually that would be round three as well if you count the bubble. I would just love to see those as my two first round series in LA because it keeps my life easy. But if I could pick any series, it would be the Oklahoma City Thunder versus the Phoenix Suns. Because obviously you have Kevin Durant's former team versus Kevin Durant's current team. You have the, like, draft and build slowly and try to, like, you know, find the right pieces around Shea approach from Sam Presti versus the shortcut. Let's do a big three. Let's mortgage the future version of the Phoenix Suns. I think just kind of like from, you know, the role of Kevin Durant plus those just completely different roster building philosophies, I want to see those two go head to head. And no disrespect to Kevin Durant and the Suns, but I want the Thunder to win that series because I think the Thunder have done it the right way. I think it's going to be more sustainable. If you were buying stock in either one of those teams for the next 5 years, there's no question which team you would buy stock in between the Thunder and the Suns. But are they ready? It's a completely fair and open question. They have to prove it. But I love how they move the basketball. I love how hard they work on defense. I love Shea when he gets to, you know, isolate against guys one-on-one. I don't really know how Phoenix would try to slow him down defensively. And then with the Thunder, you know, their defense, it's just amazing. Like, the numbers that they put up, Chet has been unbelievable. I hope he can find that second win for the playoffs. I hope he has another gear to get to. I think that's my biggest concern with the Thunder, is that he's just running out of gas, and the playoffs are going to hit him really hard. But that's the series I want to see. How about you?
My number one is Bucks Sixers, and if I can call my shot, I'm going to say second round, so Embiid gets more time to recover. You have so many... It's great from a basketball perspective, because you have these teams with such extreme strengths and weaknesses going against each other, but they're the interconnectedness of all of that and the stakes for those two franchises. So if you make it the second round, then one of them is making the conference finals. That's either Philly's first appearance in the Embiid era, or it's Doc Rivers making a conference finals and the Bucks, and then we get presumably Bucks Celtics, though nothing's written in stone. And because the tactical, like, you have Nick Nurse going against the team that I just said should have hired him, because they should have. You have Giannis and Embiid and Lillard and these franchises that have so much to play for, and that it could really affect where things go. And a second round would be better than first, both for Embiid health and because that ratchets up the tension kind of even more. If it's a first round series, then it's still fun. But if it's a second round series, then we're living and dying with every shot.
Yeah, and just like all the ghosts of the second round pass for Philly hanging over it too.
For Philly and for Doc.
Right. No, exactly. You know, like, it's going to be a battle of ghosts with Doc, you know, bringing all of his to Milwaukee. And yeah, I am, sign me up for that. There's no question about it. And if you get an Eastern Conference Finals between Boston and either Milwaukee or Philly, I think that's probably the best case scenario. You know, Miami's had a few shots in the past. Like, you know, I think, you know, if I had to choose, I would prefer Boston, Milwaukee in the East Finals. But you know, Philly, you make a strong case for a rematch from last year as well. So I don't think you can go wrong with any of those. Is there any in the West you want to see?
I mean, all of them. I'm pretty excited about it. But you brought up a couple of them, but like Clippers, Mavs again, like that. I think sometimes I've gotten into arguments about Kawhi because we did top 10 players and all that. And it's like that series that he had against Dallas in 22 will stick in my brain for a long time. And like whether he can get back to that or anything else is a really interesting question. And then, I mean, there are basically, it's almost everything there that the Thunder against the Nuggets would be just a weird, interesting series for how those teams handle each other. And then one that I've been lingering on, which could potentially be a second round matchup, is Minnesota against either LA or Dallas, the Clippers or Dallas, because those are two teams that don't always need to get around the basket. And so like how do you do that with Gobert? Of course, this is not the same Clippers team as Gobert's Jazz played a couple years ago, but those sorts of elements. And you could say the same story with Phoenix, where those teams have a different focal point offensively. And how does Minnesota's system work? I think their support defenders are really good and that it'll work out, but the stress test for a lot of these Western Conference teams is going to happen. We just don't know when it's going to happen.
Totally. And we don't know in which manner, because the range of teams in terms of how reliant they are on their bigs in the Western Conference is just massive, right? Gobert to me is one of these pivot players in the Western Conference. I think Lillard to me faces the most pressure of basically any player in the league heading into the postseason. You could make the argument Tatum too, and I would listen to that one as well. I think in the Western Conference, you know, you got to circle Gobert, especially coming off of last year where he's punching his teammates and he's not there for the play-in game. And obviously he's had a much better season this year than last year. And you need to have that payoff if you're Minnesota, right? Like this can't be a first round and out. And then now we have this existential crisis because Gobert's stuck as a regular season player. Like, you want to make some noise in this year's postseason, and I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on Rudy Gobert as we get into that first-round series.
For sure. Well, I will thank you so much for taking the time. Pleasure as always.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Danny. Take care, man.
Thanks again to Ben Golliver for taking the time to come on. You can read his excellent work at The Washington Post. You can also listen to The Greatest of All Talk, and if you haven't already, you can pick up and read his book, Bubble Ball, which is really good. And thankfully now it is feeling like a more distant point in time than it was when he wrote it. But love having Ben on, love talking with him about the state of everything. And you can, if you don't already, you can follow him on social media as well. If you want to support Real GM Radio, there are a lot of different ways you can do so. You can subscribe, download every episode. That is particularly great for this podcast because it's never going to come out at a specific time or day of the week. So you can't get into a habit. It's just when it pops in. So if you subscribe, then it'll be in there. Whatever podcast player you choose, we should be there. If we are not in your podcast player of choice, please let me know, and I will pass it along to people who can actually fix that problem. You can also help other people find the show through word of mouth, social media, leaving a rating or review. All of those are much appreciated. And then the single most important thing you can do for Real GM Radio and any other podcast that has them is to check out our sponsors. For us, that is Mood, hellomood.com, and the promo code REALGM, HELLOMOOD.com, code REALGM. You get 20% off your first order, plus a free THCA pre-roll. And of course, tells them that you came from us, and that's always good, especially with a newer sponsor like Mood. And then Prize Picks. Download the Prize Picks app today. Use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Really do appreciate that as well. You can also check out my other work, Dunked On Prime, going extremely strong right now. We've finished our top 10 players and all the position rankings, but we did gamers, and then we're doing our big awards pod this weekend, and of course, lots of other stuff, and then the playoffs coming very, very soon, and that'll be so much fun. Written work at The Athletic, I actually should have a new piece out early next week. It's going through editorial right now. And I can make no promises on release because it's out of my hands now, but I really enjoyed writing it. So we'll see how the final product turns out. And then we are done actually with the NBA strategy stream for this year. Had a really great broadcast at the end. And we should be back in another form for the playoffs, but I'm not sure that has been announced yet. But keep an ear out. And that's a good thing. You can keep an eye on Nate's social media is probably the best way to do that. And I'll talk about it on the pod once everything is formalized. And if you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com is the way to get it to me. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. That is a promise. I'm not the greatest at replying. I have a lot of other things on my plate, but I do read it. Something I do every day before I go to bed. So that is all for now. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.